This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hello, you're listening to Animal Party on Pet Life Radio, and I have a very special guest today. Coming back to the party is Dr. Jory Bocknick from nearby Toronto. Welcome to the show, Dr. Jory.
You make me feel very special. Glad to be back.
Well, you are special. I mean, you're not one of my one-off, one-hit wonders where I get off the show and I think, thank God, that's over. No, I book you before we're done so that I can have you back. You're a terrific guest. And actually, my listeners really like you, and they've sent a couple questions in for you. I don't know if you're okay answering a couple questions right at the start of the show.
Fire away. Happy
okay.
to do it.
Okay. Why does my cat vomit so often? An oldie but a goodie, Dr. Jory.
An oldie but a goodie, and it all boils down to starting at the very beginning. The question is, what's making the cat vomit?
There's a photograph included of the vomit, and to me, it's a hairball.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry I can't share that photo with you. It's exquisitely lovely, but it's a hairball.
It could be. I mean, and so for cats who get hairballs, there are remedies we can do for that. But sometimes cats who vomit hairballs, once they vomit it up, I happen to have one of these cats, it sets a cycle of vomiting up where they just keep on doing it until you sort of turn it off because they've got an underlying inflammatory problem with their stomach.
Oh.
And sometimes it's food related and sometimes it's just autoimmune. But the hairball is like the straw that sets the camel's back breaking, or in this particular case, the cat vomiting. And some of these poor little kitties will then vomit for days.
Oh.
And give themselves some significant issues if we don't turn it off. So my little ragdoll foundling kitty is one of those cats who gets hairballs, and I have to give him a little bit of an injection to cool off the vomiting. Otherwise, he'll vomit for the rest of the week.
Is this sometimes an OCD type thing? Like a habit?
Not so much OCD,
no.
I take that back. Cats who over-groom because of behavioral reasons can do this to themselves. Yes, for sure. But cats don't vomit because of OCD.
Right. So the more you groom a cat like this, the better it's going to be, right?
Sure, because they're getting rid of it, all that loose hair, and they're not ingesting it 100%.
Okay, so that's one thing they can do preventatively. Should they maybe see their vet? Like, how do you even report? I mean, do you bring in the vomit? Like, what do you do when you bring in your cat like this to the vet?
So one of the things you can do is you come in because you say, this is what my cat vomits up. And yeah, bringing in that hairball points us in a direction. And then we often have some options. For instance, we can try some routine preventative things. Regular grooming is one. Starting them on one of those mineral oil-based pastes, and there's a variety of flavors for them. And some cats get it once a week, and some cats can need it 3 times a day, for instance. The goal being that it keeps everything moving in the right direction, and they poop it out instead of barfing it out.
Okay. All right, well, I have more questions for you. Watery eyes. Now, this is interesting because they're bringing out another point. She's saying, my cat's always had watery eyes. Is it a problem? And I like the always, because I know that we want to be alert to changes, right? Like a cat who all of a sudden is drinking water excessively might be diabetic, or there could be something else going on. But if it's always had watery eyes and it's been to the vet and, you know, had previous exams and blood work and nothing's been found wrong, should she be worrying about it still? And why would a cat have watery eyes?
Well, it depends. I mean, depending on her type of cat, one of the problems some of the flat-nosed cats have is their tear ducts don't work very well. So tear ducts are the drains of the eye, and the primary one are the lower lid drains. And these drain from the eyelid margin through the sinus or tracking along it, and they end up dumping the excess tears into the nose. That's why dogs and cats, for instance, have wet noses, because that's where their tear ducts drain into. Well, these flat-nosed, flat-faced cats, their tear ducts are quite tortuous and they don't drain well. And so if the drain flows slowly, then the pool of the tears can overwhelm the drain and it can spill over the edge of the pool, the eyelids. So some cats, if they fall into that category, can do it because they have a functional obstruction of their tear ducts. This can sometimes be opened up by flushing them. Or sometimes, again, you ask if it's a problem, if this is the issue and it's just a little bit of wetness on their face, it's more cosmetic than problematic, and just keeping their face clean may be the only issue. But with a lot of cats, what I want to make sure is they're not tearing because of irritation. And most cats who have chronically irritated eyes have a virus. And it's either herpes, and herpes is the number one culprit here. And so low-level herpes infection can present as runny eyes as well. So it really depends on what the driving force is, and that's something you got to pop them into your clinic to have a look at.
Okay, so when you see herpes all of a sudden, you know, yeah, is that something people should, they can't get it from touching their cat's tears, right?
You're not going to get cat herpes, no, from touching your cat's.
Thank you for
herpes
clarifying.
Is like one of the number one viruses of, yeah, number one viruses of cat. I'm going to say it could also be chlamydia, but again, not
you're
something
not
gonna you're going to get from,
that
your cat.
From your cat either. Okay, because we got to be clear when you throw these scary words around. All right, we're going to go to break and come back, and I'm going to ask Dr. Jory, which is worse? When he comes into an exam room and he doesn't know the animal and the animal's not very chill, which is worse, facing a cat or a dog that doesn't want to be examined? Okay, stay tuned, everybody, on Animal Party Pet Life Radio. This is Deborah Wolf, host of Animal Party on Pet Life Radio. You know the expression, cats have 9 lives? Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations, too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Hello, we're back on Animal Party, Pet Life Radio, with Dr. Jory Bocknick. Okay, Dr. Jory, the exam room is waiting for you. The door is closed and you've been told there's a difficult pet inside. What do you hope it's going to be? Is it going to be a pit bull? Is it going to be? No, they're probably easy. Who's the worst case for you behind that door?
If I have to take a really angry dog or a really angry cat, give me the dog. Cats are way scarier than dogs.
Okay, hands and to set the record straight, you don't worry about pit bulls, do you?
I've never been bit by a pitty, but I've been bit by a lot of Cocker Spaniels.
Right. Yes. Okay. Part of that's because people let little dogs get away with a lot, I think. But I don't know. What's it like at the clinic?
Well, I mean, the little dogs could be some of these little dogs that are growly, barky little things. I tend to call them Fendi purse dogs because people turn them into Fendi purses. Their feet never touch the ground.
Yeah. You
know, I've never been bit by a pitty. I've never been bit by a shepherd. But Minpin, Jack Russells, Yorkies, Chihuahuas, yes.
Okay, and what about the cats? Did you need stitches?
Cat bites are nasty. I've been bit a few times by kitties. You got to leave those open. You always need to go on antibiotics. They carry some nasty bugs in their mouths. But with cats too, as long as you kind of respect them and go slowly, and there are things we can do. I mean, they're coming in and they're usually angry because they're afraid. So if we can do things for most of our pets, whether they're dogs or cats, to allay their fears, the exams that could have been bad can actually become quite pleasant. For instance, just taking time and not rushing, whether it's a dog or a cat, and letting them come to you as opposed to you jumping on them can allay a lot of their concerns. And with cats, we use a lot of pheromones in our exam rooms. These are little smells that the cats can smell that we can't, but they're calming. And it sort of puts them into a nicer frame of mind. If you let them sit in the room and breathe in the pheromone for about 5 minutes, it ratchets them down a little bit. And then with our dogs and cats, we can also give them some medications. They're not sedatives. They're calming medications at home. So they come in and they're not expecting armed for bear, ready to run and fight for their lives. They're kind of like, well, you know, I'm a little nervous, but it's not so bad. And Dr. Bocknick's cool. And he's going to give me treats now. So you're taking your time. And what I'll do, what I'll often do with some of the rescue dogs, if I see if blue heelers, And Australian shepherds usually fall in this category.
Okay. Well, they complain like pet pigs. They're complainers, I think.
They're complainers, but they're fast. And they can be really sketchy when they're rescue dogs because they have no trust in anything. They're super smart, super fast, super strong, guarding herding dogs. And so if what I tell a lot of my clients when they come for their first, just an introductory visit is, I want you to come to the clinic a couple times of the week randomly just to come in, get some treats, and leave. And so all of a sudden, the clinic goes from this scary place to the giver of Oreo cookies. And so the dogs start to look forward to coming, and then they come in and get treats and get pets and leave.
But now they've left their scent there too, right? They've left their own scent. So they go, I've been here before. It was okay.
Yeah, it's not new. It's not scary. And they're not only time they come here, they're not getting poked and prodded. Most of the time they come, they're just getting cookies, getting pets and leaving. And if you can kind of habituate them to that, a lot of the fearfulness goes away. And then you could just sort of habituate them to, you can start to get used to the scale. So the scale's not scary, and then come into the exam room. And for some reason, they like all my nurses usually better than me, male or female. But once they get used to the staff, then it's really quite easy.
That's interesting because we had an email question. My dog seems to be sexist. No man has ever been mean to my dog, but for some reason, he only likes the ladies. Does that happen to you where the dog comes in and it's like, oh, I need my associate to look after this dog, the lady vet, because he's not looking at the man vet?
It's not that uncommon. You also see it a lot in birds. But sometimes it's the difference between men and women in the way that we carry ourselves, the way we sound, the way we smell. And so some dogs who are either dominant or fearful respond differently to a male person coming in who's carrying themselves in a more dominant fashion. And so it puts them on edge. Whereas a woman coming in carrying themselves a little bit differently, they're like, oh, well, you really are nicer than that mean Dr. Bocknick. I like you a lot more.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
And
yeah,
birds are definitely different. Birds definitely have a preference one or the other.
And it's not necessarily always women, is it? Is it the preference for their opposite gender? The gender opposite what the bird is?
I'm not sure.
I think it might be very individual. Yeah.
Very individual.
Okay. So we're going to go to another question. This is about catnip. And I find it interesting. I find when a cat gets catnip, it just kind of makes that cat, however they are normally, more extreme. So if the cat is normally a cuddler, it's more cuddly. If it's normally an athlete, it's going to run around more. If it's normally a little bit unpredictable, it's going to be unpredictable. But I'm not sure everyone finds that. What do you think? Does catnip change the personality of the cat?
I don't know that it changes the personality, but it chills them down. It ratchets them down. So we've recently adopted another street cat. And we have one cat, Richard Parker, who is a grumpy Gus. And anytime you try to bring anyone into the house, no matter how young it is, he's mean to them for at least a couple of weeks, always getting in their grill and growling and whatnot. But introducing him to catnip, and he cares a lot less.
Okay.
He becomes way happier.
Right. So is there anything dogs can have that's like catnip for cats? Not really.
I haven't really found anything that works the same way. People have tried different medications. We can use different medications to relax or calm them, but nothing really works like catnip works on cats for dogs that I've been able to find. Like, for instance, if I want to train cats to use a particular scratching post, putting catnip on it is a 99% guarantee to draw them to it. Mm-hmm. Whereas there's really nothing like that. I mean, for me, it's fried chicken and fudge. Makes me super happy. But there really is nothing like that for a dog. You know, that works the same way as catnip.
Yeah, I guess not. All right. Well, that's interesting. Okay, we have lots of questions. We're going to get back to the questions, go take a break, and come back to our questions from all the listeners who've been waiting for you to come back on the show, Dr. Joy. Stay tuned, everybody, on Animal Party Pet Life Radio.
Need the perfect gift for the cat lover in your life? Check out ComfortDiva.com. We have cat-tastic gifts to make you smile, like cat-themed tote bags, kitchen towels, quirky mugs, and stylish t-shirts. For holiday gifts or anytime, ComfortDiva.com has it all. Treat the cat lady in your life to something pawsome and save 20% with coupon MEOW20. Visit ComfortDiva.com today because every cat lover deserves a little comfort. ComfortDiva.com, where comfort meets catitude.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Hello. You're back on Animal Party Pet Life Radio. And cats and dogs really are different. Like, one of the things I use, Dr. Dory, to get two cats to like each other is I will get the scent of the one on a blanket or something and then put it in the other's area. I will get their face scent on my hands and then pet the other one. So if you do that with a dog, it will just track the cat better. It's not going to make it like the cat. It's going to think you want to find the cat. So some of these things don't necessarily work between the two species, and catnip's one of them. But I think your advice for getting a dog used to a clinic is similar to getting a cat used to a clinic. What about if someone has a recently rescued pet that's nervous? What about calling up and asking to come in when it's quiet? Can they do something like that? Or a 100%. Cat coming in when there's no dogs, maybe?
Yeah, coming in when randomly at times, just to come in to hang out for a little while, get treats, or if they're too nervous, come in, maybe just have the owner brush them a little bit and then leave, making so that the place is no longer an aversive thing. What you really want to do is try to find something they really like. So find any of these cat treats. Some of these treats are like crack for cats. There's like these little gel packets that my staff are telling me about that I'm going to try because one of my cats who's really fearful, trying to get meds into him is a nightmare. So I want to habituate him to taking things from me in a positive way. And so with some of these cats that are nervous, what I'll do is I'll have the owners give them a medication called gabapentin at home. It's kind of calming and relax them. For instance, it's like I'll use it for cats who have to go on car rides, who hate the car. You know, and they scream the way to the cottage, for instance, for 2.5 hours.
Oh, isn't that something?
Well, giving them gabapentin about 1.5 hours, kind of just ratchets them down a bit. So yeah, they get a little nervous, but it's not so bad. I don't really care. And then they get to the cottage, you're like, oh, well, that wasn't so bad. Mm-hmm. And you do that a few times, and then maybe you need half the amount. And then you do that a few times, and then maybe you don't need any because it's not so terrible. So you're basically taking an animal who gets into too much of a state of anxiety where they can't learn. And then you get them on some medication that drops that anxiety so they can learn. And then you start to withdraw the medication because they no longer need it because they've learned that it's not as bad as they thought it was.
Okay. Well, I want to dig into the overpopulation issue because in my career with dogs...
Don't even get me started right now. I'm not sure what you're like on the West Coast, but shelters are so full, they don't even have room anymore. They've got foster people all over the place.
Well, I had a boy and girl dog dropped off here, supposed to stay here for a few days at my kennel, and the owner never came back to get them, and then she delivered 8 puppies, and now I have, as you mentioned it, just so coincidentally, blue heeler border collie crosses. Oh, yes, ideal for every apartment. So I got 8 of those puppies and the parents to find homes for. That was June 25th, so they're ready for homes now. If anybody wants to look at them, go to Camp Good Dog on Facebook, and you can look at them. And if you want to see...
Well, then my plug for you is we're going to find a better blue heeler border collie cross coming out of your place.
Well, that's true.
They'll be socialized. They'll be well trained.
Yeah, they've already been with kids lots and all kinds of... Yeah, they've been socialized and trained and all of that. But I was not going to breed any dogs ever again. And now I'm trying to find homes for what is not my usual market. But they're beautiful. They're black and white and brown and smart and clever. But I did want to ask you, because since I've been doing this career, it used to be people were eager to get their dogs spayed or neutered. They would ask me, you know, when's the earliest I can neuter him? When can I spay her? I don't want her to have a heat. I don't want the mess. I don't want the trouble. I don't want the aggression, they would say. And with kittens and cats, too, people, the shelters used to spay them as infants almost. You know, with the first vaccine. And now I'm finding people think they should wait. They think their dog should have a heat or even a litter. They think their cat should develop. And I don't think they realize that their kitten and puppy are actually sexually mature earlier than they think. So what do you tell people to try and deal with this? When is the ideal time?
So if we talk about females first, as much as we can tell, the ideal time, if you're trying to prevent something for instance, like breast cancer, if we're trying to prevent pregnancy, if we're trying to prevent uterine infections, and the best time is before their first heat. There's been this online push to let them remain intact. It's not based on anything scientific. It's all based on emotion. There's a push, for instance, to have ovary-sparing spay surgeries, tubal ligations. But what people realize is when you do that, you don't reduce the breast cancer risk.
Of the ovaries. Oh.
Yes. You don't reduce any of the behavioral issues. You don't reduce the heats. So it makes no sense. Well, the other, one of the big problems I'm finding now is COVID did a few things. Well, more than a few, but as far, and for you and me, one of the things that COVID did was people had nothing to do, so they're desperate for pets. So everyone and their sibling became breeders, quote unquote. Well, now COVID's over, people aren't buying. And so what we're starting to see is puppies and kittens are getting left on the highway. My most recent acquisition is a kitten who was discovered sitting on the shoulder of the highway, just sitting there, nails trimmed, perfectly groomed, little munchkin cat that someone clearly hadn't sold. And so fortunately, one of my clients saw it, brought it to the clinic on my anniversary. And before I know it, they had
happy anniversary.
My wife and said, oh, guess what? Your anniversary present just arrived. But we're seeing tons of these unfortunate, unwanted puppies and kittens that nobody wants. And so they're doing very unpleasant and horrible things. And they all should be spayed. Dogs should be spayed ideally before, all these animals should be spayed before their first heat, in my opinion. Large and giant breed males, there is some evidence to show that it might be beneficial to neuter them later in life, but it also comes with some questions because it also depends on temperament.
And if it's beneficial for dog trainers because if you neuter your dog late in life, you're going to need me. And I get to make some money.
And as you know, once a male dog starts marking, they're never going to stop.
Right. It's an ongoing commitment. We're going to have a relationship. You're going to be paying me for the rest of that dog's career. We'll solve one problem and a new one will pop up. Oh, I'll love it, but you won't love it. So how about just neuter your dog and never have him make a fight, cause a fight, be the victim of a fight, never have him in a fight ever. Wouldn't that be nice? Because the bills at your place for a fight are extreme, right? He gets ripped up and stitches and oh no.
This has been the summer of animal fights. It's been the summer of male dogs going after porcupines, male dogs escaping, going for a run to find the female that's in heat because we have so many more coyotes. The coyotes draw the dogs out as well. We have far too many animals.
And then they kill your dog. You may think your dog can handle it. You may think, well, my dog's a big Malibu and he can handle it. He can't handle a pack of coyotes descending on him when he falls for the trick of the female in heat that's sent to draw him out. I mean, this really is happening. We're not making this up. So spay your females before their first heat, which in a cat can be 4 months old, right? Or sooner? How old is a kitten when it first has its first heat?
It can be. Usually, if we can get them, depending on the time of year, you're usually safe if they get it done before 7-8 months. Having said that, in the shelter community, we will spay them at 6 to 8 weeks. There's nothing in the literature to show that early spaying causes problems or early neutering in cats causes problems. We used to think that neutering boys earlier, the urethral development wouldn't be as normal, and so it could predispose them to bladder infections. We now know that is not true. And this is looking retrospectively over decades worth of data, thousands and thousands of studies, and thousands and thousands of animals. And so the fact that A, there is no risk, and B, that these animals aren't getting released back into the community to procreate, and then you have all these poor little kittens that come into the shelters infected and unwanted, and that only getting euthanized, it's heartbreaking. So neuter them, spay them, adopt them, yes, but then neuter and spay them so that they're not adding to the problem that we're trying to solve.
In all the years I've been here working the commercial kennel, 50 dogs or more, and the career prior to that, I don't think I've ever seen a male dog with a bladder infection. I don't think so. It's not that common, is it?
We do see it, but what I see a lot more frequently is unneutered males with prostate problems.
Well, and you know what we didn't mention, which to me is the biggest risk, besides the fighting, because intact male cats and intact male dogs fight. That's the first thing. But the next big thing, or maybe bigger, is cars, right? They're often wandering, looking for love, and they don't care that there's a car. They're too busy locked on a scent. It's like when you see a fetchaholic dog fetching the ball with all his adrenaline, his eyes, pupils are dilated. He can't think of anything else. It's like that. He's not going to see the car or hear the car. So you're not doing your animal a good thing if you wait, right?
No, no, absolutely not. And going back to your history, your background, that's why reliable recall is like the number one thing you want to teach your dog, because it's the only thing that's going to save their life when they're hightailing it towards the street. At least you'll scream, they'll pause, and someone may hear your yelling, as opposed to untrained dogs. They haven't taken to them class. They haven't done any real work on these puppies. They're now 8 months old. They're unneutered and they take off. And now the road is beckoning and the car is coming. Spending that time, people getting their dogs into puppy class. Get them in as young as you can. Start the training early. Before you have problems, the energy you invest in the first 6 months of their life pays dividends for the next 12 years. Make your life easier.
Yes.
Get a good trainer, someone who has been doing this for a while, and put the work in. You will be so much happier and your dog will be happier.
Start as you mean to go on. Teach your dog what it needs to know is normal. Don't stay home all summer and then go back to work and expect it to be relaxed when you go back to work. If you've been there all summer, you got to set things up to work. So we did talk about catnip a little bit. So I just want to say to people, if you feel like going to YouTube and seeing me train a cat to come and shake paw for a little bit of catnip, and it didn't take long. It's a few minutes long video, not even. I think it's in YouTube Shorts on Deb Wolf Pet Expert. And there's another one I'm going to post today. I wasn't going to post it because it's not the best video. You could sort of see a bit of a lawn chair in the way. But it was after I did a show recently where we talked about grooming cats and how important it is to get them used to being touched in all their uncomfortable places. And then I talked about how you could just seize the moment and teach cats to jump over a post or come when called. Anyway, I'm demonstrating all that on YouTube. So if you want to see how to get a cat to be a long-haired cat, to get used to being brushed, you can see that on YouTube, Deb Wolf Pet Expert. Or if you want to see a cat coming, jumping over posts, you know, fancy stuff that you might think is out of reach, but it's not. Cats are just as smart as dogs, and they can learn just as much. All right, everybody, we're going to say goodbye to Dr. Joy for now, but I know he's coming back real soon for another show, and I still have lots of questions. If you have more questions for Dr. Joy, please send them to deb@petliferadio.com and I will get them. All right, everybody, from me, Dr. Jory, and Pet Life Radio, be good to your animals.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.